Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday morning. Very nice to have you with us. A delight, actually, to have you on this Friday. A Friday that actually seems to feature something that we have been lacking. Sunshine. Which, we'll take that. Very nice. Let me introduce our panel to you. We'll tell you, give you some updates on the lockbox. We'll tell you how you can get involved in the conversation, and then we'll actually have a conversation. Albany County District Attorney David Soares is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Today I am great. I am great.
I am great.
It's when the sun helps you. It's when the sun helps you with yard work, you know? So I always feel good when we have a storm and it's like, man, we're buried. And it's like, please, God, just give us one of those days.
Don't give the sun too much credit. I think it was the rain that did most of the work for you.
That's true. Well, you know, the sun dries up all the rain and the teensy spider.
And the ice.
About again. It's all good. Aaron Pasitti is with us. He is the a wonderful professor of economics at Siena College. And if you want to know why he's wonderful, just look at Rate Your Professor.
Sure.
You score high.
Thank you.
You score high.
I do.
He also scores high.
What is your
high
Uber rating as a professor? I didn't know that there was like an Uber rating. What is that? What did you score? What did he
also
score?
Well, he scores well in being a professor. He also scores well in hotness.
You know what? Yeah, I could see it.
You know, this is going to be my last radio show with you guys, and then I'm going to primetime TV since Joe thinks I'm hot.
Well, I'm just reading the thing. You haven't looked
I've
at it.
I've read them.
Okay.
Thank you, Siena students.
We're waiting for Judah. I don't know if you've been listening to the airwaves all morning. Some boats got loose, big boats on the Hudson River, from Troy to Rensselaer. So all of those bridges are shut down because they're worried that the boats will smack into the bridges.
Someone's getting fired.
I don't know. You know, it's weird that it'd be that many. So I assume it's weather related, obviously, with the sudden thaw after a sudden freeze. But who knows, David? But anyway, so when I came down, there were just like choppers going up and down the river. That makes it difficult for people to make it across the river. Judith is one of those people. So she will be here shortly.
You know, I've often thought about that very thing as a public safety remedy for Albany County, where we can keep some people from crossing the bridge. I didn't think you had to go and cut some ropes on some boats to make that happen, but that gives me an idea.
So yeah, instead of building a wall, we're just going to tear down bridges?
That's all it takes. That's right. That's all it takes. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Speaking of hotness.
That won't help you. I have to say, I'm speaking to you from an undisclosed location. I try not to do that, but it's my house because when I walked out the door this morning,
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Every single roadway here outside my home is completely glazed with ice. Try walking on ice. Even Murray couldn't do it too well. If there's a patch of snow, you go on the snow. But where the pavement is, it's pure ice. Yeah. Dave Gustina told me the same thing this morning. But let's get to more important things, and that is, Joe, you could, if you would, do the honors and read out what we've got in the locked box.
I have a total just given to me by the wonderful Amber Sickles, $450,604.
So wow. we need 50 grand to get to the halfway point. How much longer
49,
do we have?
49.4, yeah. We have 2 weeks and 3 days.
Oh, come on. I think we could. Couldn't we do that today?
We could do it in an hour if we all decide.
It's $3,000 a day. That's nothing.
That this place.
Said the economist.
Thank you all. Thank you. As Aunt Ruth would say, thank you all. Her voice dripping with sarcasm. The answer is that we could do it. We've many times made 100,000 or more during a particular day. But it's the question of consciousness. How much does everybody who is, and I mean this, how much does everybody who's listening right now rely on the panel? There are a few who don't like it, but who listen assiduously every day. We know we hear from them every day. And there are so many people who love it and who say this is one place. And when we hear news like, and we're going to go there without my blowing it about Roger Stone this morning, where else would you head except to WAMC to listen to the implications of all of that? So many people recognize what this panel means to them and how important it is. And all we have to do now is, if everybody would go, now, is it worth $3 a day, $1,000? Yeah, it is. It is. And there are a lot of people who are listening who have that $1,000 and who can do it. There are many people who have $100 for $120, right, Joe? You get the incredible gloves with WAMC emblazoned on them and maybe even embalmed. And then you get the hat, the WAMC hat, and somebody walks up to you, right, Joe, and says, oh, I didn't know you listened to WAMC. And 2 weeks later, you're married. All of that is in play here.
There are the hats, guys.
Did you say 2 weeks later you're married?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's happened. We've had it. There's the hat.
Somebody walks into the supermarket and sees you in that hat.
Yeah, those are the gloves. Oh, except the real ones come with fingers.
You know what? I'm already married, but if I were a single man, I would be taking copious notes today.
Guess what, David? I'm not going there.
Yeah. Well, you know,
because it has other implications. If you get what I mean.
Yes. Well, I just want to say, along the lines that you just said, Alan. I think what we're seeing is the massive takeover of local, both television as well as radio stations by companies like Sinclair that serve as nothing but the apparatus for government, and you know, free speech is under attack, and it's stations like this that prompt dialogue that has the listenership that you have earned and built over the years. And it's important that we get together in the morning to discuss what's happening so that we're connecting people and we're connecting voices. And this station is a very important place to do that.
Well, all you have to do is go to WAMC.org. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. $120 will get you the gloves and the hat, but whatever you can do, as Alan mentioned.
It ain't about the gloves and the hat. It's about us. It's about our continuance. It's about who could have ever thought we would, in this country, be in a place where we are today, and how important this single voice is to all of us. I'd like to say, the hat, the gloves, this, that, you can have anything you want. But it isn't that. It's the gut. It's what we feel about our radio station.
Alan, I agree with you, but you just had me at the whole supermarket with the gloves on and people getting married. I mean, the gloves do mean something. If people are finding other people with the gloves and the hat, let's do this.
Yeah, that's
people
right.
Finding other people.
That's right. I mean, screw Tinder.
That's right.
All right. So WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. Okay. Let us talk about the big news of the day. This happened very early in the morning, and Roger Stone, advisor to Trump, is indicted in the Mueller investigation. The longtime, quote-unquote, informal advisor to President Trump was charged with 7 counts, including obstruction of an official proceeding, making false statements, and witness tampering, according to the special counsel's office. Mr. Stone has spent decades plying the dark arts of scandal mongering and dirty tricks to help influence American political campaigns. This, I don't think, is a huge shock. We saw this coming. It was a matter of when, and the when was this morning. Again, charged with 7 counts. Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Right before dawn, the FBI arrested him at his home. He was expected to appear in a federal courthouse there later this morning. FBI agents were also seen carting hard drives and other evidence from Mr. Stone's apartment in Harlem. The indictment is the first in months by special counsel Robert Mueller, who is investigating Russia's interference in the 2016 election and possible coordination with Trump campaign associates. Citing details in emails and other forms of communication, the indictment suggests Mr. Trump's campaign knew about additional stolen emails before they were released and asked Mr. Stone to find out about them. That according to the New York Times.
God, I wish we had a district attorney on our panel this morning who could explain what's going on. Because Stone, you know, has been saying from the very beginning he was going to get indicted. He knew it. So obviously, they right, David, they've said to him, you're a target. Don't they do that?
Well, Roger Stone is amongst the population of Trump people who continue to be dumb out loud. They, you know, not only have they left their
rarefied crew.
Yeah. Not only do they leave their fingerprints on the things that they do, but they then get on all the different networks and they talk about it. And they become very vociferous in denying it, which just draws more attention to them. Now, here's what I'll say about this. This has been a long time in coming, but I don't believe that that anyone is surprised by this indictment. This is something else I will also share with you. The Mueller investigation, just like the U.S. Attorney's Office, these are men and women that do not just go into the grand jury to seek indictments when they have just probable cause. These are people that have enough evidence to support successful convictions. It's proof beyond a reasonable doubt before they walk into a grand jury to seek an indictment. So although this indictment, we're being informed of it today, this has been, as those of us from Rhode Island would say, this has been in the hopper for several months.
The thing that, you know, the thing that strikes me as weird, maybe not weird but predictable, is that
the fact that he has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back.
Yeah, and it matches David's "Make America Great Again" neck tattoo. So you know, I mean, this kind of begs the question, and I've been thinking about this for a while: did Trump actually ever want to become president? And when you see all of this happening, and you know, given Trump's behavior and what he was saying on the campaign trail, it really seems like, in hindsight, he was using this as a marketing campaign for
Absolutely.
His brand.
Absolutely.
You know, for the, you know, Trump hotels in the U.S. and abroad. So he never severed any financial ties. He was willing to play dirty to get as far as he could. And he nor any of his advisors probably ever considered the legal repercussions of what would happen if he became president. So this kind of leads me back to it's probably an unconventional hypothesis that Trump probably never wanted to become president. He should be smart enough to know that he's not smart enough to be president.
So I would only just fine tune that a little bit of not that he didn't want to be president, but he didn't think he would win.
He didn't expect to become president.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Sure.
The problem when you have novice who run for office is that they are always seeking the expertise of others. Any campaign. All campaigns, whether it be local campaigns, state campaigns, federal campaigns, you're always going to attract some of the worst people possible. People who come to the table offering their services to do, you know, the dirty work. And here's Roger Stone, a man who dubs himself the Loki of political campaign. He calls himself the trickster.
Yeah.
Right. The dirty trickster. This person's one talent. His one talent is underhanded backroom shenanigans, leaking materials to the press, creating the appearance of scandal. This is the only thing that this man is an expert at. And so here he is onto this campaign, amongst all these other characters that were not vetted and brought into this campaign. And so this isn't surprising at all. Now, where we go from here is how many other of the Roger Stone, you know, other members of that bandwagon are we going to also see indicted in the next couple of weeks?
David, could you give us just a little bit more of the legalistic way that this works? Like, does somebody get named? Roger Stone knew he was going to get indicted. He was aware that he was a target, right?
He was absolutely aware that he was a target. I mean, if you recall, several months ago, we were here discussing the mutual defense arrangement that all of the defense attorneys that had, where they agreed that they would be sharing information with one another. I think we started talking about that right as Cohen was beginning to plea, because his attorney then withdrew his participation from that process. And so all of these defense attorneys were sharing information, especially if the Mueller group were interviewing Party A. The questions that were asked of Party A would then be memorialized and shared with the rest of the group. That's why Trump, specifically through Giuliani, that's why he was able to really get ahead of a lot of the issues, because he would send Giuliani out there to talk about, well, you know, moving the goalpost once again. Well, there may have been people in the campaign who knew, because because they were getting that information from all these other defense attorneys that were participating in the process.
So one more question, and Joe, I'm sorry for...
No, that's all right. We just have about a minute.
Okay. So one more question, and that is, why did they wait so long to indict him?
I don't think it was a matter of waiting so long to indict him, because there are several other things that this the Mueller team could also be working on. And if they had indicted this person prematurely, it would have possibly compromised other irons in the fire, so to speak.
I just want to, when we come back, we'll ask David about the fact that this obviously came with a warrant. They're taking all kinds of stuff out of his house in Florida, as well as his office in Harlem. We'll talk about that. Also, Sarah Sanders came out just about 3 minutes ago and said that the charges against Trump's longtime associate, quote, have nothing to do with the president or the White House. So
that's the question, all right.
Well, we will continue our conversation. We will be back. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning for this Friday, the 25th of January, 35 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. And we have a great panel. Alan Chartok is here, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti. We're waiting for Judith Enk. We mentioned earlier that at least, I guess, four boats were swept away from the docks of the Hudson River in the ice, choppy waters of the Hudson. And the Captain J.P. Cruise Line, that went for a ride. The Rusty Anchor Restaurant Barge, that went for a ride. Okay. Bunch of tugboats. So what that has done is closed most of the bridges to get from, because Judith is a Rensselaer County person, to get over to Albany County has to go across a bridge. And all of them are closed.
It's like the world's most dangerous game of bumper boats.
Yes.
All I know is there's a guy named Jimmy who was supposed to tie all these things down yesterday. You know,
Sheepshank-ness.
Yeah, he
might
have been texting a little bit too much, trying to get the lines on the game coming up, and he forgot. And Jimmy.
Oops. Or how about Harry, who had the knife that slipped the ropes?
I'm surprised WAMC doesn't have enough pull to get Judith the police escort to the station on time.
Yeah. On the contrary.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the bridges are starting to open, so that's all good, and they're getting a handle on it. So it just, and everything has to work itself out. So I anticipate Judith's arrival.
We don't build walls; we build bridges.
That's.
That are too low.
We just have a couple of letters, and before we get to those, I guess one of the questions I had for you, David, was about the with the subpoena that you get, and you go in with a warrant.
Yes,
right. You go in with a warrant, and you arrest him, and then, but. You're also looking for stuff. I mean, they're going through his house in Florida. They're going through his house in Harlem.
Yep.
So they're looking for stuff. So that is that to bolster the case they already have, or to further it?
It's so in order for them, they've already gotten the indictment. Like I said, our federal colleagues, they they tend not to walk into a grand jury with minimal evidence. They tend to walk in with a solid case. They do extremely great work, right? And so the case that they have, they can make based upon the information that they presently have. But what you're going to see over the course of the next several weeks is amendments to indictments. You're going to see additional indictments because a guy like Roger Stone, he's going to make every effort to have covered his tracks. And the evidence that they are going to secure from his computer, from other materials that they gather from the house, files, all of those things are going to demonstrate additional things that he's done. The other thing to look for in the coming weeks is additional indictments and people like Manafort and other witnesses, because now with the information that they've retrieved, they're going to learn that under oath, these guys, whether it was interviews with them or interviews with Congress, they're going to learn that these people lied, and they're going to have proof of those lies based upon either previous testimony or the information that they're able to gather from the new warrants and subpoenas.
Except, David, one thing that is puzzling is that the defense seems to be the lawyer is already out saying this. Yeah, you know, he may have lied, but it was all a memory lapse. It really had nothing to do with it. It was not on purpose. How far does that play?
It doesn't play at all because, you know, certainly if you had memory lapse, you know, that's one thing. But the amount of airtime that this particular defendant has spent on all of the different networks talking about, you know, his involvement. Actually, it's his very loud defense that I think that he put on for himself in an effort to sway public opinion that I think has ultimately done himself in.
Let us go to some of the letters, and we'll try to figure out more of this. Okay. This from Stephen, who says, thank you for doing the important work of providing intelligent coverage of the news, though I must disagree that Trump wanted to be president. His ego alone would make him want to be president. I don't think he could resist it. I keep thinking if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, and surrounds itself with other ducks, it's a duck. White House charade of pretending Roger Stone has nothing to do with Trump is hilarious.
The beautiful thing about Sarah Sanders' line, her response, is that all she had to do is go in a computer and look up Paul Manafort responses and just, you know, change the names here. And
a little copy-paste.
Yeah, copy-paste, and it's the same thing, right?
But if Trump really expected to be president, you would think he would have at least done his due diligence to make his life easier as president in terms of severing financial ties, kind of, especially toward the late end of the campaign, just stop doing these things that were going to come back to haunt him.
Well, I just want to ask.
So either he's dumb and didn't consider it, or he just didn't think it was going to matter.
I just want to ask every single listener out there. Some of them, as a matter of fact, I want to talk to Mark from Massachusetts, who still has doubts about, you know, the Mueller probe and everything else. Ask them to just ponder this one question. How many people do you know in your life, your circle of friends, how many of them have been arrested, investigated in the volume that this particular president, it's like every single person in his picture at the swearing-in ceremony, at his first, you know, appearance where he had his cabinet members, you just put X's. I mean, it actually looks like the wall for an FBI investigation, right?
Yeah,
all of them connected, but they're all sitting right next to one another.
Great, great point. I want to go back to Aaron, who is, of course, forever, as far as we're concerned, the hot professor.
Hot economist is what I'm going to be.
Hot economist.
Hot economist.
But I want to go back. I want to go back to him because
that.
I respectfully don't agree with him. Here's what I think is going on, much since we know about the narcissism and the egomaniacal part of Trump, and also the fact that he doesn't read and he doesn't know. He thought, I think his love for dictators and others is showing this, he thought a president was omnipowerful, that there was no way that he couldn't do anything that he wanted to do. I don't think so. I agree that he wanted to be president. I mean, they worked very hard, let's face it, to get him to be president. But I think his naivete about this whole thing was that he thought that once he was president, he could do any damn thing he wanted to do. And I think that's what this is all about.
And your theory, Alan, is supported by the fact that on numerous occasions during his fomenting and his complaints about his attorney general, he continued to come back to, look at Eric Holder. Eric Holder did so much for the president. He covered him. He watched his back. Like, really? Like, the attorney general's job isn't to watch your back, dummy.
Was that an impression? Yeah.
Sorry.
It was close. It was close.
That was good. Yeah,
like, I mean, I see your point, Alan. I agree with that. I'm just saying that it's just a... just a thought I had on the way in this morning.
He's the accidental president, but he's fully embraced, you know, the position. But his ignorance of history and understanding for what the position is, he's made himself believe that he's the Don.
You know, if you read Jack Kennedy's stuff that people have reported, the books about him and the rest of it, he was always worried about impeachment. From day one, he was worried, if I do this, is it excessive? Could they impeach me for it? So that's Jack Kennedy, one of the squeaky clean guys of all times, compared to, you know, a piece of filth like this.
Let me just make one more point on this particular president, right? As an elected official, okay, you're a public servant. You are in the service of others. You're talking about a man who has never been in the service of others in anything he has done in all of his life. Never, right? So here he is at the 243 pounds in a position where you are not only in the service of your fellow Americans, but in so many ways, you're in service to the world, right? Because you're influencing policy throughout the world as the leader of the free world. And this is the man who's occupying that position right now.
Okay, one last thing here, and that is this indictment, series of indictments, shows obviously Stone in a very unflattering light. But it also shows that he was doing this with all those other guys who are getting indicted, so that they have all these lines going back and forth between the campaign officials, right, and Stone. The question is, when is the line going to reach the president? And so far, nothing doing.
Well, I will say this, that you can look for perhaps some additional indictments against Manafort. And there are going to be additional indictments against people who could not have been indicted before without disclosing certain information to Stone. But I think that Stone is a major block in the building block to where the investigation is going, and you're going to see a number of other people be
reindicted. Is this a guy who can turn? I mean, your instincts as a prosecutor would help us here. You know, he seems a little nutty to me. Like the early guys who all thought they were going to get pardoned so they could do anything they want. I think Manafort was one of them. I think Cohen, to some degree, was one of them. But is this a guy who instinctively you think could be turned by the feds?
He's going to be turned because I think he's too much of a prima donna to ever wear bright orange and not have, shrimp and other delicacies that he's accustomed to. He's accustomed to a particular lifestyle, and I don't see him putting the interests of anyone ahead of his.
So you have a lot of these people who probably were knowingly lying, but were willing to fall on the sword for Trump, thinking that, well, when this is all over, I'll get a pardon. Even if I go to jail for a couple of years, Trump has my back. I think now that the whole Trump image, whether it's, you know, his real estate empire or his, you know, quote, public service, now that that's tarnished, I think people see that Trump has very little to offer them after all of this is finished. So
to
David's point, I think it wouldn't be surprising to see people like Stone turn, whether it's because they don't want to wear orange jumpsuits or that they just don't see any benefit down the road from them turning because of how much damage Trump has done to himself and his inner circle and his brand.
And you know what's interesting here, and you know, as Aaron is as the hot economist is talking, that, by the way, that's sticking. That's never going away.
No, I'm for it.
Oh boy.
And I'm jealous.
What's happened here, you know, is almost, it's almost self-imposed, right? I mean, the only thing that this president had on his side were the strong polling numbers and the undying, you know, loyalty of a base. And what does he do? He begins a trade war, right? That impacts the very heart of that base.
Yes, and, but they haven't moved. They haven't moved.
Well, they haven't moved because because the effects of that trade war, you know, I mean, for I'll tell you what, if you're the guy who's growing soybeans and you voted for him, it's moved, okay? It's moved. But now what you have is this government shutdown. And the confluence of those two things is eroding his support. And so when fellow Republican senators see that erosion, what are they going to do? They're abandoning ship right now. You have Pelosi, who's all about, she's spent the last two, her hands must be tired because she's just spent the last week spanking him around all over Washington.
And she's a hero, a heroine to everybody. This lady who was dumped on by everybody is now.
Including
the
Judith Hink.
Right.
I just want to say, but you know, I'm
not
all
here
about,
to defend herself. No, yeah, she's just screaming at the
cheap
car
shot.
And the radio.
Well,
in the car.
We're going to call a tugboat captain and see if we can get message to her. But my point being is that this man's own conduct, his self-imposed, impulsive policy-making decisions, is eroding his own base. Eliminating his support, getting people on the Senate side to jump ship, empowering Nancy, and the House investigations haven't even begun yet. And so what's going to happen in the month of March? Month of March, we know that the sentencing for Manafort and Flynn, all of those sentencings are coming. There's going to be allocutions, right? And so you have a whole host of things that are compounding that— This man's not going to make it. He does not have the Constitution to be able to survive everything that's coming at him at once.
Well, one thing that we all watched last night was
have to take a break, but go ahead, Alan.
Okay, very quickly, we watched when the Republican National Committee said nobody, but nobody is really going to be allowed to run against Trump in a primary. Brer Rabbit, don't throw me in the briar patch. Something's going on.
All right, let's pause there. We will be back, continue with letters, and we welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we are going to go to some letters, and we welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. This from Alicia, who says, after listening to Ben Carson this morning, I was so disappointed, especially with the population that he serves. He doesn't seem to understand that our president shut the government down and the president has had the opportunity to open all parts of the government except Homeland Security. The president is the one negotiating. The president is the one not negotiating, and he is holding the American people hostage. That from Alicia. Mike says the closer the indictments and convictions get to Donald Trump, the tougher it is for Trump to distance himself from them. Remember, Donald boasted about hiring only the best, which I believe was a point David made earlier this morning. All right. Gary says the reason these people are all dumb out loud and seem to be making really idiotic mistakes is they never expect anything. They never expected anything to happen to them. They have been getting away with everything their entire lives, and then they think they were always above the law.
One last thing on that, and that is you'll remember in the beginning when we all thought that they were waiting for pardons, that they could do that, they would be insulated waiting for pardons. You remember that Trump kept hinting one way or another that he could do that by pardoning a whole bunch of people from the past, the present, in order to say, hold the fort, guys, I'm coming. It didn't work out.
It's been the greatest misuse of the bully pulpit ever in the history of this country, because we've usually used the voice of the president in that position to talk about humanitarian issues, to talk about, matters that were impacting the entire globe. And we have basically forfeited that position. No one's taken the mantle, but this is a man who's used that position for self-interest. And now threatening the father of Mr. Cohen, making those gentle hints. And of course, everything that comes out of that man's mouth, everything that comes out of Giuliani's mouth, there is some person with a pen and a pad, sitting and the FBI office and Mueller's office and you know, writing it all down.
Taking note. As it were. All right. Otha says, why did Donald Trump back down from asking Mexico to pay for the wall and did not try to be hard on them about it or truly challenging them, and yet he's inflicting great pain on Americans to pay for it, not even during NAFTA renegotiations? What do you think is going on behind the scenes that we don't see or hasn't been brought to public awareness?
Well, I think that... the idea that Mexico is going to pay for the wall is something he thought up on the spot in front of a big rally and did not think it through and just kind of stuck with that because that's what he said. I don't think anybody thought that was going to be a realistic proposition. I think it just probably came to him and he's got no filter and he said it.
Well, you know what? I'm going to leave here after we're done. Right, I'm going to go down the road there to the Paula Chevrolet. I'm going to stand there. I'm going to stand right by the Corvette. And I'm going to tell the salesman that I want it. And when he comes to me and tells me, okay, how are you going to pay for it? I'm going to say, oh, that guy right over there at the bus stop, that's the guy that's going to pay for that. That's what a president, a candidate for the president of the United States did. He wants something, but he's just going to have someone else pay for it. That's not how life works. It's never worked that way.
And then the way he's tried to weasel his way out of that statement by saying, well, all of the money that we're going to be, you know, getting from Mexico because of the reworked NAFTA, that's actually how Mexico is going to pay for it. And it just gets more and more convoluted.
I can tell you right now that any other president that we've had in recent history, and given the A players that surrounded those people, right, if a president made a promise or slipped up, they had enough talent, right, within the organization to either wordsmith it or create policy around it. Not only is this guy, you know, not a qualified president, but he certainly surrounds himself with the most unqualified people. And so it's always a constant reaction and trying to justify the ridiculous statements that he's made. NAFTA, the renegotiation of NAFTA, which isn't really a renegotiation, they were going to tax Mexico and they were going to build a wall through that way. Well, you didn't say that during the campaign.
These are obsequious sycophants.
Oh, wow.
I got to tell you, man, I was word. Let me give your name men for that.
James writes, as the news tightens around his neck, Trump sees remaining in power as his only salvation, hence state of emergency, martial law, dictatorship. Preemptive action has to be taken, and soon.
I'm sorry. I'm still stunned by obsequious sycophants. I can't move on. I'm stuck on that.
William said, David, could you please comment on the president passing prison reform where the past two administrations failed at that?
That is, right? Talk about a person who can't even trumpet, you know, the one good thing that he's done. Because I can't think of any other policy, right, that this administration has engaged in that benefits anybody other than people in this administration. The criminal justice reform that was recently passed, there was, you know, both parties aggressively worked on this, that is going to establish, you know, resentencing guidelines for people in the federal criminal justice system. I mean, we've had judges, we've had prosecutors who have been hamstrung by some of the most strictest sentencing guidelines and provided absolutely no discretion to the very people who we believe should have discretion. And they've just managed to achieve a great thing, but we haven't heard about it. We haven't been talking about it because of all the dumb things that that this man continues to do.
We got this from Julie, who says, why does it say that despite Trump and all the president's men are liars, con men, and crooks, that somewhere between 3 and 4 Americans still love Donald Trump? How can his support still support him? And what does that say about America we live in now? How in the world did we get here?
Give us that stat again. 3 and 4 say what?
I don't know. That somewhere between 3 and 4 Americans. I'm
guessing that's 1 in 3.
Or 1 in 4 is my guess.
Yeah.
Or it's just Republicans. I mean, he still polls strong amongst Republicans.
Well, I mean, I think it's one thing for people to respond to a poll in 2019 to say, depending on how the question's worded, yes, I support Trump. It's going to be a very different thing when it comes time to actually go to the ballot box in 2020 and pull the lever or fill in your Scantron form for a president. So, you know, he's always going to have that base of people who are xenophobic, people who are racist, people who are misogynist, and he'll always have that. But, you know, like David pointed out earlier, that a lot of that other support, the people who are kind of on the margin, you know, small business owners, you know, farmers from, you know, the Great Plains, they're being affected by the shutdown. They're being affected by the tariffs. And when it comes time to vote in 2020, that number might be a lot lower.
And Aaron, let's remember what's happened in the midterms, right?
Yeah.
Let's remember what's happened in the midterms. Let's remember what's happened in Alabama. Alabama, right? I just said that out loud. We have a Democratic senator in Alabama, and if that's not alarming for the Republican Party and for the Republican National Committee right now, then there's really something wrong there.
Well, let's remember that in that case, you had a great. A really bad opponent. So otherwise, Alabama would probably still have a Republican.
But Alan, isn't really bad opponents what this party seems to be gravitating to right now? I mean, these are the people that are on the ballot. I don't want to conflate or get off topic here. But you just had a state secretary in Florida who just resigned because of images of him in blackface.
Yeah.
You know, you have all sorts. These characters are in government right now.
They are.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and maybe we'll find Judith. We'll be back after this short
tugboat
break.
Tugboat Judith?
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 6 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok is here, Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, and we lost. Judith Enck was on her way. She was on her way. And then boats got loose on the Hudson. It's a real story. Listen to Ray just talked about it on the newscast. And so that closed all the bridges. Now, where in the world is Judith Enck? I think she can tell us. Judith, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. I'm still in the car. Sorry to miss the show.
Hi, Judith.
It's been a morning of zen.
Where are you?
Well, I'm clear. You know, lots of traffic. Motorists in Rensselaer County are very, very patient. Every time I got to a bridge, they closed it. So it's been a morning of deep breathing and embracing that you can't control everything. And I did just cross the river, though. It's very exciting, but I'm not going to make it to the show by the time it's over.
Okay. So do you want to weigh in on the Roger? We have some more letters, and then we're going to move on to some other stuff. But do you want to weigh in on the Roger Stone arrest this morning?
I've been listening to the show. I've been hearing David Soares taking pot shots at me. I'm just waiting for the climate change story. I don't need to weigh in on Stone. Finally, he gets indicted, and I'm in traffic.
Kind of a shame, isn't it? You knew she was listening. You did know that.
You know, I miss you, Judith. Come on. You know I love you.
Yeah. You're there with a plastic straw. I know you are.
He's got two, in fact.
All right. So let's handle that story, and we'll go on to some other stuff. Just before we move off the shutdown, though, I mean, there are two aspects to this. One is CNN is reporting that the president is and he alluded to this yesterday, that if there is no shutdown agreement, we had the two votes yesterday, that it very possibly he could go back to the emergency order. That is what CNN is reporting. And then we're also, obviously, the stories continue to pour out about how the shutdown is affecting everything from federal workers, lack of a paycheck, and, oh, by the way, the TSA, the air traffic controllers, and also the economy.
This is the reason this man is not going to make it. And let me just say this, okay? First of all, if you're a Democrat and you offer penny one to build a wall, you're not getting reelected. Okay.
No.
And that's you know, Nancy Pelosi is that it's not penny. You can let's call it border security. You can do some things. You can fix old fences. You can do all of that. But if this man is insistent on going out there and trumpeting a wall, it's just never going to happen. But let's assume one thing, right? Let's assume that they give him $5 billion for the wall. We're in the month of February. This is the second half of his first term.
It's right? January, by the way.
Well, for all intents and purposes, we're coming into the month of February, right? And so let's assume that he gets his money for the wall. Do you have any idea the volume of litigation that it's going to take for eminent domain proceedings all across the southern borders? And you know what? He's going to be running again in 2020, right? Without having had one brick laid down for that wall. If you're his advisors right now with this shutdown, right? You say, "Okay, look, we have to bail out on this whole concept of wall. Get the border security, get the Dems to give you $40 billion for advanced border security, declare a win, and move on."
So Alan? There's another side to this. And that is, as we have always said, political science wonky type on the show, it isn't getting the wall. He wants to own the issue. If he never gets the wall, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is I tried, and that's what's important to him.
But I think you're going to see a lot of Republicans who were in favor of immigration reform start jumping ship on supporting even a bill that contains the wall, because that's not an effective solution for immigration control. That there's a lot of Republicans and Democrats out there who are in favor of immigration reform who are advocating very different platforms. Stricter enforcement of people overstaying their visas, where they're allowed to be here legally. Standards for applying for and being admitted for asylum. There's a whole host of issues that Trump is just ignoring with the wall. And I think even if a bill does come forward that has funding for the wall, a lot of Republicans are going to have some very difficult decisions to make to say, do we vote for this to say it's a Republican victory, or do we vote against it and actually try to advocate for more substantive immigration reform?
Again, down in the weeds, all very interesting, but it's not what this is about. The wall is an image that this president has. Keep him out with this wall. Keep him out is the important part of it. The wall is an image. He'll do what he has to do to pursue this thing. He's not going to give it up. He can't.
Judith?
Well, I agree with Alan, and I also want to point out that when President Trump finally agreed that Nancy Pelosi had the prerogative of not having the State of the Union address, his base attacked him for that. Rush Limbaugh and Coulter went after him. And so I think it's, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Right.
They wouldn't even go along with, you know, the little fake crisis on the State of the Union. And so they are unforgiving unless they get every brick of the wall, which they're never going to get.
Well, let's also understand that particular base is firmly in the corner of Donald Trump. I liken them to, I don't know if you read last week, where there's a woman, and I forget what country she's from, but you know, she was feeding an alligator, and that alligator grew to be like 18 feet, and she had stumbled into the yard accidentally, and then she was eaten alive. And so, you know, here is the president and this base that he has fed. He has fed them. Right, this thing has been growing.
It's Indonesia, by the way.
It's Indonesia.
1,500-pound crocodile.
Exactly, and so he has fed this base with all of this vitriol, with all of this anger and xenophobia, and you know what? Whenever he can even appear reasonable, they're going to eat him. They're going to eat him up alive.
And even if he declares a national emergency, there's going to be legal challenges as to whether you can declare a national emergency. emergency and use taxpayer money.
He has no way out, right?
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, justifying a national emergency based on this invasion of the border is pretty flimsy. Unauthorized immigration is down 13% from its peak. Furthermore, apprehensions of people trying to cross the border illegally on the southwestern border of the U.S., where he's trying to build a wall, is down 76% since 2000. In 2000, there were 1.6 million unauthorized crossing apprehensions, and in 2018, there were 400,000. So I don't know how anything like that can stand up in court, even if he declares a national emergency.
Judith?
Yeah, well, it won't, especially by definition. You know, an emergency is something that's sudden. It's an earthquake. It's a hurricane. He's been threatening the emergency for almost a month now. So by definition, it's not an emergency.
Yeah, it's called evidence. And in order for you to walk into a court of law, you have to have evidence. Right?
Yeah, but
it's not Judge Jeanine Pirro that he's going in front of. It would be a federal circuit judge that would require the government to provide evidence.
But here's the real problem. The word emergency, right, gang, is really symbolic of where we think, or where I think this president has been trying to get us to go, along with all the great demagogues of history. Once you start, it's a slippery slope with emergencies. Everything becomes an emergency. As you have said, this ain't an emergency, but everything is gonna be an emergency, which allows him greater powers.
True. Yeah. All right, let's move on to a couple of other stories while we still have Judith on the line. And that is, as climate warms, plants will absorb less CO2. That according to a study from the journal Nature. What does that mean, Judith?
Well, it's because of drought. One of the impacts of climate change is drought, and so the roots of plants and trees get weaker, and the tree or the plant cannot absorb CO2 at a rate that it has. Currently, about a quarter of CO2 emitted from power plants and cars and trucks is actually absorbed by vegetation. That's why preserving, you know, the Amazon rainforest is so important in the Adirondack Forest Preserve trees. But ironically, as the planet gets warmer, trees and plants' root system weakens, and the absorption doesn't happen as rapid a rate. So we're in this downward spiral. It's a very prestigious, you know, well-respected journal. I think this is going to inform climate science going forward, and it's pretty bad news. And, you know, at a time when the Trump administration has repealed or delayed 80 major federal environmental regulations, including the ones dealing with climate change and air pollution.
You know, I have to say, Judith, that already with the number of candidates that seem to be declaring every single day, every one of them that I've heard has had something to say about global warming and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. Yeah, and the Green New Deal.
Yeah, and the Green New Deal.
Just on the Democratic side, though. You know, I don't think even if you have Republicans challenging Trump on the Republican side, you're not going to hear Kasich and Romney and others talking about it, but it has become a much more prominent issue. And for candidates like Governor Inslee of Washington, I think it's, you know, like the central organizing principle of his campaign. Just yesterday, Senator Gillibrand came out in support of the Green New Deal. Mm-hmm. So if a Democrat wins in 2 years, it's just going to be all hands on deck and reinstate the climate change regulations that the Trump administration has repealed, and working around the clock. You know, every year that we dither makes this a harder issue to solve.
And you're starting to see support for this come from both sides. Last Wednesday, right, in the Wall Street Journal, there was an opinion piece published by it was signed by like a dozen Nobel laureates in economics, and the last four Federal Reserve chairs, three of whom were Republican, Ben Bernanke, Alan Greenspan, and Paul Volcker, and Janet Yellen. In addition, I signed it as well. There's thousands of economist signatures on this saying, we need a carbon tax and we need it now. It's a market-friendly, or it's a market-based solution, and it has to happen.
I'm curious to Judith's opinion here in terms of industry. I mean, I think when Obama had provided that relief for GM and a number of other companies, there were agreements about them continuing to, you know, lower or raise gas.
Improve
fuel efficiency. So, and the consumers responded to that. I mean, consumers are out there buying things that are more efficient, right? So I just would think that between, if it's not too late, if 2 years isn't going to, you know, if it's not too late, we would have the confluence of both leadership in support of more to be done, you know, on the environment. We have industry providing more support and some of the best thinkers. So I'm hopeful for the future in terms of policy.
There is a report out from the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, saying that there are delays at LaGuardia, Newark, and Philadelphia airports this morning due to air traffic controller staffing shortages amid the shutdown. And no clear end as more air traffic controllers continue to not come to work. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. I mean, they've decided that they're not going to work for free. you wonder, Alan, something like that, where people are sitting in airports for 12 hours, if that's going to hurry things up a little bit.
I am so old that I remember when I was working at the Eagleton Institute of Politics and traveling all over the country for them, we had something like this. And you would circle and circle and circle before you could land for sometimes 2 or 3 hours, as I remember. It was extraordinary. And that's what's going on now. If you take a look at the map of the United States, how many planes are in the air, you won't be able to see a piece of real estate. There are so many up there.
Right.
And this, of course, is going to be affecting an awful lot of people, right?
Self-imposed.
Yeah.
Self-inflicted.
And Judith, what do you think? I mean, don't you think that the more this comes home to people and actually, and we've talked a lot about this over the last month, over this last, whatever, 36 days, that when it starts to really affect people. But, I mean, if you can't get from one place to the other, that is certainly a major impact.
Well, I think it'll impact the negotiations on the shutdown if it affects, you know, Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C., and if members of Congress, those delicate things are delayed. I think it's a matter of days before food stamps payments are not being made. There's a big problem with HUD housing vouchers. Scores of people are already being impacted. And I do think the Democrats have to be more aggressive. It's one thing to go to the floor of the Senate and make an impassioned speech, but I think every Democrat should be doing news conferences in their districts this weekend explaining the face of the shutdown. You know, the Coast Guard is not getting paid, the same Coast Guard that's sending boats up the Hudson to stay on top of these boats that have ruined my morning commute and the commute of many.
Glad you're not bitter.
There are real life impacts, Judith, people who are not going to get food stamps. Yep.
More importantly, the same Coast Guard, which is supposed to be doing the interdicting of all of those drugs,
right,
which Trump is always yelling about.
Right. This is the first time part of the armed services is not getting paid. The FBI agents who knocked on Roger Stone's door this morning and woke him in his pajamas, my guess is those FBI agents are not getting paid.
Well, we know they're not.
I think it's incumbent on the Democrats now to really put a human face on what this means and why even one week more of this is unacceptable.
Well, a word for the Republicans. Let's be fair here. Judith, let's really try to be fair here. You got Wilbur Ross, who says they could just go, what is all this about? Just go get a loan.
Go get a loan and eat some cake.
I just want to say this in closing. If a WAMC hat and gloves are bringing people together in supermarkets, why can't we ship a bunch of this to Congress?
Oh, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
We'll work on it.
Make a
note. We'll make a note. all right, Judith, thank you very much. We're sorry you have been had such a horrid commute, but we're glad that we got to talk to you for a little while. But thank
smart.
You. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Alan, thank you very much from your undisclosed location.
I'm getting my Yak Tracks out.
Excellent. Oh, that's good. That's good. Don't fall. So thank you very much.
Again.
David and Aaron, a pleasure. Great to have you both here. We'll be back with more after this.